Recorded live in the Phantasmo Lounge high atop the Carlos Ray Building in beautiful Midtown Portsmouth, Virginia, it's Phantasmo After Dark with your host, Rob Floyd, and co-host, Phyllis Floyd. Tonight's topic, Silent Rage. Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back to the lounge and the old podcast here.
Hi, Rob.
Hey, Phyllis. Glad you could join me tonight.
Well, of course. It's such a chore.
Such a hard trick to get into the lounge. Huh? Hey, tonight we're going to talk about a movie called Silent Rage, which is a Chuck Norris film, believe it or not. Yes, we're going to do a Chuck Norris film, but it's not the typical Chuck Norris film, and that's why we're going to talk about it. Hey, before we get into that, though, coming up soon around here in the area, there's some cool things going on. If you happen to be in Tidewater, Virginia, or Hampton Roads area, or near there, next weekend, what's that, the 13th?
Yes.
14th, 15th?
Yes.
There's MarsCon in Williamsburg, Virginia. It's locals call it Relaxicon. It's a real low-key but fun sci-fi con. It's been going on for, what, over 20 years at least.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of good people there, a lot of fun, a lot of costumes and stuff, dealer's room, etc. We're going to be doing 3 presentations there. So come check us out on cult films and stuff like that. Also, next Friday is, what's that? Is that the 13th?
That is the 13th.
Wow, Friday the 13th at the Narrow Expanded Cinema in Chesapeake, in Norfolk, Virginia. The other film things in Chesapeake. At the Narrow Expanded Cinema in Norfolk, Virginia, I'll be hosting Big Trouble in Little China. Yeah, come see that on the big screen. Kurt Russell and company. A lot of other people that don't really, well, Kim Cattrall actually is the only other name in it, but man, Big Trouble in Little China is a great flick, and if you've never seen it in the theater, now's your chance. Come to the Narrow and see it next Friday. It's going to be amazing, and of course we'll be giving out prizes too, so that's good. And the first Friday in February, I believe, is the next thing, is going to be the next Phantasmo Cult Cinema Explosion. And for Valentine's Day, we're going to do Love Stories Gone Wrong. We're going to show The Crow and another movie called House Where Evil Dwells, which not a lot of people have seen, so that'll be pretty cool. Come and check that out. And that is free at the Chesapeake Central Library on Cedar Road. Check out the Phantasmo Cult Cinema Explosion Facebook page for more info coming soon. All right. I think that's all the current events that we need to talk about.
Sounds good to me.
Now, this movie, Silent Rage, like I said, this is a Chuck Norris movie, and we know everybody knows all the Chuck Norris jokes and all that stuff, and everybody, you know, you either love Chuck Norris or you hate Chuck Norris, pretty much. And if you love him, this movie, a lot of people who love Chuck Norris haven't seen this movie.
Well, because it's not a normal Chuck Norris film.
Yeah, and it's not like in the canon library, so it doesn't get rerun on TV a lot,
right?
Like a lot of his other films. And this was I guess it was an early film. I mean, it was kind of middle there, because before this he did, Good Guys Wear Black. Most people think that was like his first starring film, but actually he did one called Breaker Breaker a year before that, where he played a truck driver, and you know, he did some fighting in it, but it didn't get a wide release. But there was Good Guys Wear Black in 78, Force of One in 79, The Octagon is the one people most remember in 80, and then An Eye for an Eye in 81, which was pretty cool. You know, Mako was in that. And then in 82, he did Silent Rage, and Forced Vengeance came out. Now, Forced Vengeance was a more typical Chuck Norris type of movie. And that was cool. That's a good one, too. That was a lot of fun. And Lone Wolf McQuade came out in 83. But Silent Rage came out in 82, just before Forced Vengeance did. And it's not a Chuck Norris movie, you know, but he's the star of it.
Yeah, it really felt like you could put anybody in that part, and the movie would have been fine. You know, like, sometimes you watch Chuck Norris films and you think, Chuck, he was just made for that part.
Oh, yeah.
That was, you can't replace him there.
Well, they're written movie, for him, you know.
Yeah, this movie, it didn't feel like that. I mean, not that I hated him in the part or anything. I just think that you could have put anybody else in that part. It wouldn't necessarily
And taken out the fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wouldn't necessarily have mattered.
Yeah. Now, the reason we keep saying this is not a typical Chuck Norris movie at all is because it's not an action-adventure movie.
No.
It's basically a horror suspense movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really done well. Kind of Frankenstein-ish, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's really done really well, I think. Mm-hmm. The suspense in it is real, and you feel it. You're on the edge of your seat waiting for the next thing to happen, it's going to happen. Oh, nothing happened. Oh, then it happens.
Yeah, it really is a very suspenseful film. They did a really good job.
It works great. My mom hates it, the movie. Because
too suspenseful?
She took me to see it in a theater when I was a kid, and she came out, and she was just like, gosh, she was on the edge of her seat the whole time. And it works. This movie was directed by a guy named Michael Miller, who also directed the same year National Lampoon's Class Reunion.
Totally the same kind of film.
Totally different film. But they both had a few things in common. They both had a murderer, killer, mm-hmm. a psycho murderer killer, killing off everybody. And they both had Stephen Furst.
Oh.
Yes, that's another reason this is a typical Chuck Norris movie. His sidekick, his deputy. Well, okay, let's go back. He plays a sheriff in this town, Chuck Norris. His deputy is Stephen Furst. Yes, Flounder from Animal House. And this was not long after Animal House. So.
I really like Stephen Furst. I've always enjoyed him. But I hate the kind of character that he plays in this movie.
Oh, yeah, the bumbling idiot.
Oh, yes, I hate that. And I guess they put it in there because they felt like there needed to be some kind of comic release or whatever. But
yeah, you know, that's... Ugh. Yeah, and that the little comedic bits really... kind of, they're not like comedy ha 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 funny, but it's him bumbling around and I guess tension relieving, like they have to do in, you know, a lot of horror movies these days.
It just makes me groan.
But, yeah, but it kind of halts the flow of the movie to stop. You have to pick it up again. You know that story he tells where they're driving about the dog?
Oh god, that's horrible.
He brought that to the director, said he's had this story for a long time and he wanted to use it somewhere, and they said, well, use it when you're driving, just tell Chuck the story.
I hope this wasn't a real
story. I don't know if something it was or not.
Oh my god.
But the face
horrible.
He makes when he says that, what the dog looked like,
okay, that part was actually funny, but it's a horrible story.
Now, you know, there's a scene in the middle of the movie where they go into that bar and Chuck Norris beats up the bar.
Right.
It's a bunch of bikers in there causing trouble, and he goes in there, and of course they give him shit and he has to beat them all up. That I don't know if that was filmed after the movie was done or during the movie. They figured out, I was reading somewhere, they were like, hey, we need some more fighting in here because we got Chuck Norris.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of fighting. Yeah. And it's not a lot of fighting in the movie yet. So that was the big.
Well, I mean, wasn't a lot of fighting in the movie, period. I mean, if you take the bar fight out.
Oh, yeah.
There's not much fighting. Even
no, and that's why they needed
it.
Yeah.
Wasn't really fighting like you see Chuck Norris do,
and
usually.
That's why they needed it, because they were, you know, they were banking on Chuck Norris's name.
Right.
To carry the movie, and because he was up and coming, you know, martial arts guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he had, you know, there was that little bit of fight at the beginning when he confronts the psycho guy for the first time, and then really at the end when he's fighting him again,
that's
about
it.
But you know, you don't really notice it that much because the movie does go along at a pretty good clip, and the suspense keeps you going in between the bits that aren't suspenseful. It starts off, it starts off really cool. The opening credits, it's just stained glass window and this little
house,
little music. And the credits are fading in and fading out. And it kind of, you're going, you forget you're watching a Chuck Norris movie when the credits start. So that's great.
What do you hear? Like the kids screaming in the background and the mom hollering at them.
Yeah. And then the light comes up and you see the stained glass window is the window in a room. And you hear the background of the kids playing in the yard and carrying on. Like you say, the mom screaming. And you see our bad guy, for lack of a better word, open his eyes and bend. He gets up there banging on his door. He's got a phone call. He's all sweaty and he's looking like just he's out of sorts. And he goes and talks on the phone and it's his doctor and he's telling him, I can't make it. I can't hold on. And it's not going to work. He tries to get his pills and he fumbles and drops them. And he goes outside and starts haphazardly chopping, takes an axe, chopping on the woodpile. And the kids are out there playing and he goes like, to the chicken coop or something, or the garage, and the mom calls the kids in, and this is great. This is where it starts to get really, I mean, right at the get-go, the suspense right here. So as the kids are walking in, he walks out of the garage thing and is walking in behind them with this axe, and they come in the house, and you don't see him because the way the camera is around the door, and the mom tells, you kids go play in the park and get all this noise out of your system before you come back, and he walks in just as the kids are leaving.
Right.
And they're gone, and he walks around the corner and then chases the lady up the stairs with the axe, and you're like, you know, a second or two later, he could have killed all those kids.
Yeah.
And so that was shot really well. And this whole time, the camera is moving around point of view, like you're in the room watching what's going on and following the people mm-hmm. moving around.
And there isn't music at this point, right? Wasn't this all
silent? Yeah, this is all silent. There's no incidental music, no mood music. So it's really like
it's creepy.
You're peeking around the corner watching this. And yeah, and it really does. It works incredibly well and sets this suspenseful tone. And like I said, you forget you're watching a Chuck Norris movie. It's become a Halloween ripoff, basically. But but it works, though. It's done well. You know, and then he chops a lady upstairs. Neighbors hear the screaming, and of course they call the cops. And then this SUV pulls up with a badge on the side, and out steps Chuck Norris in a cowboy hat. And then you know you're watching a Chuck Norris movie. And then Stephen first steps out. You're like, oh, God.
And you can tell, just looking at him from the very beginning, he is the most incompetent police officer ever.
Oh, worse than Barney Fife.
Yes. It's horrible. I asked Rob, why in the world did they get Stephen first to play this part? And he said, because Barney was busy.
Yeah, because... Because Don Knotts was doing Three's Company at the time, so he couldn't do it. But, you know, then Chuck goes in the house, and he chases a guy. They fight a little bit. He chases a guy out.
He jumps out the window.
Jumps out the window, and he gets hit with a 2x4, and then he takes 2x4 away from the guy and knocks him out, handcuffs him, and throws him in the backseat of the car. The guy, of course, he's running on, you know, maniac strength. He's out of his head, adrenaline. He breaks the handcuffs, kicks the door off.
Yeah, and by kick the door, it's like comes off the freaking car. It's not even just open.
And he gets out and wrestles a gun away from a cop, and then all the rest of them start shooting him, and mm-hmm. he's dead. So they take him to this research hospital, which is a part hospital, but mainly research hospital, because his psychiatrists work there.
Right.
So they take him in there, and they get all the bullets out of him, but he's basically brain dead. So before they call it, they pull out this experimental serum that the doctor's been trying to develop for cell regeneration mm-hmm. or something like that. And they inject him, and they inject him, and inject him, and they give him a high dose. And I don't know if they know it works or not, so they say, okay, we're going to call it. And the one doctor, Ron Silver, playing the other psychiatrist, leaves, and the other two doctors are still there. And the one is like, you know, up the dose, give him, you know, a super dose of it.
Yeah. Well, the psychiatrist fought against it because he said this guy wasn't right to begin with.
Yeah.
He said, I'm sorry to say it, but the world's a better place without him in it.
Yeah. And it's not right.
He knew he was screwed
human up. Human testing and all this stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And other doctors, three doctors. The other one I forgot to mention is played by William Finley, the Phantom of the Paradise. Yes, he is. Which was amazing because you don't see him in a lot of stuff. Now, the film goes on, and he meets the love interest, the old flame, Chuck Norris, that is, he hadn't seen in years, and you get the requisite nude shot, and the next day or whatever, the doctor comes back, and the other doctors show him that the guy heals immediately. They cut him open with a scalpel, and it heals right back up. And, oh, that looked cool. You know, it was done cool. Well,
yeah.
Whether it was reverse film or not.
It
looked good.
It didn't matter. It looked good.
Yeah. And things go on. The guy gets away. I don't know if the guy, I can't remember now. I don't think they even show you how, I think he just gets up and goes after the other doctor. I don't think he was sent by the first doctor. No, yeah, he wasn't.
We contemplated if he was sent by the doctor to get rid of the psychiatrist, but
yeah.
I don't think
so. So he goes after a psychiatrist.
I think he just knew.
Yeah, regardless, he goes after the psychiatrist, and he gets him and his wife, and it's that whole thing is very suspenseful. Mm-hmm. Where he gets them. It's fantastic. You got to check that out. Like I said, go in to watch this, not like you're watching a Chuck Norris movie. Go in to watch a suspense movie, and I think you'll be surprised. Or even if you go in to watch a Chuck Norris movie, you'll be really surprised because it's not, you know, the Octagon. It's not Lone Wolf McQuade. It's not Missing mm-hmm. in Action. You know, it's a different type of movie completely.
Yeah.
Anyway, the rest of the movie is him going after some people, and Chuck Norris finally going. Actually, trying to get away from him, taking the girl, trying to get away.
Yeah.
And in the end, Chuck defeats him, and the credits roll. But it's also one of those endings, the end. Or is it? Which is always cool.
Anybody who watched this whole movie would know that the dude's not dead.
Oh, yeah. Well, the director, I was reading something, said he kind of thought it's a shame they didn't do sequels to this, whether it was Chuck Norris or not, but mm-hmm. with the killer character, because they can't die, you know.
Right.
And a lot of people say it's like a, call it Chuck Norris versus Michael Myers. because, you know, it came out near the same time.
He was wearing kind of the same outfit. Yeah, he doesn't have a mask on, but he doesn't talk.
That's right. But the director was saying he always thought it was Chuck Norris versus Frankenstein, mm-hmm. because he was, the doctors kind of created him, you know, that he couldn't die. And it was a science thing, not just a supernatural thing. You know, so that's what the director kind of felt. And I can see it that way. I mean, yeah. But it's more, like I said, with the jumpsuit and everything and the expressionless face and the not. It feels more like Michael Myers. And it was closer to when Halloween came out, too, you know. But, and it does feel more like, I want to say it feels more like a 70s movie than it does an 80s movie.
I can see that, yeah.
Of course, the 70s weren't really over until like 80, 81 anyway. that's when the 80s actually started, about 81, 82. But once you get into, because even, I think Good Guys Wear Black was 78. 79, Force of One, Octagon was 80. And Octagon feels like a 70s movie. Mm-hmm. Eye for an Eye is kind of a bridge, kind of across, you know, it's almost, it's got that 70s kind of feel, but you can start seeing it's getting in the 80s a little bit. But then you get Forced Vengeance and Silent Rage at the same time. And it, you know, it doesn't really start to feel more like the decade of the 80s until Lone McQuaid, Delta Force, Missing in Action, until those movies come out. So this is, I'm not saying it's a timeless film, but it really isn't dated. You know, it doesn't feel like it's set in a specific
time. Yeah, no, it doesn't. You're right. I mean, you can look at the stuff around it, you know, clothes and all that.
Oh, the clothes, the fashion.
Yeah. But it's not dated.
Severely dated. Yeah. You know, like Night of the Creeps, where it's like, oh, that's the 80s.
Yeah.
Right. There's no doubt about that. But this is one of those films that not a lot of people have seen. And I keep saying that because it's true. When you talk about Chuck Norris films with people, everybody has seen Lone Wolf McQuaid, everybody's seen The Octagon, and everybody's seen Missing in Action, the later ones. And then, you know, a lot of people have seen Good Guys Wear Black, Force of One, you know. But you mentioned Silent Rage, and they're like, what? You know, and even Forced Vengeance is one that doesn't come up when you talk about Chuck Norris films. And that's not a bad film. It's really, it's pretty good, and it is a Chuck Norris film. There's no doubt about that, you know. I remember seeing both of these in the theater, too, that year when they came out. In fact, Silent Rage was the first Chuck Norris film that I saw. Or at least the first one I saw in a theater, anyway.
Well, that's an interesting introduction to Chuck Norris.
Yeah, I may have seen Good Guys Wear Black on TV and wasn't really impressed because there's not much fighting in it. Mm. I mean, less than this, I think, you know. And I don't remember ever seeing Force of One or Octagon until later. Home Video is probably where I saw Octagon the first time, which I need to watch again. Has been a while. But yeah, this was the first one. I remember my mom taking me to see Silent Rage at the Great Bridge Twin Theater. Great Bridge, where I grew up there in Chesapeake. And it was amazing, you know, sitting in the dark watching this. It was a horror film, and not knowing that going into it was really cool. And of course I was, you know, young, preteen, and it was like, oh, Chuck Norris, you know, he's fighting and kicking his bar's ass and all, and furthering my interest in martial arts at the time. And so it was really a cool experience. And it's another one of those that I can watch again years later and still enjoy it just as much as before. And yeah, I know it's a Chuck Norris film, and I understand its failings. I'm not saying it's high art by any stretch of the imagination.
It really isn't. Yeah.
But it is a fun little film, and because of the difference from all his other films, you know, and the suspense and the horror aspect of it, which I think they tried to do. He did Hero in the Terror years later, which I don't think worked as well. It felt more like a Chuck Norris action movie and not a suspenseful horror movie.
Well, I will tell you that probably the biggest failing in this movie for me was the supposed romance between Chuck and his old flame.
Oh, yeah. That
was horrible.
And it didn't really even need to be there. But I guess it did, because it needed to be a reason for him to check on her and to go after her, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, they could have worked it out where he was just like, a decent guy, and going after the doctor's sister.
I didn't
care
about the fact that there was a romance. It's just that
there was no chemistry.
No, none at all. Yeah. And it's funny, because later when you see the psychiatrist and his wife, you actually said something to me. It's like, that felt natural. That felt like an actual relationship.
That's the thing. Chuck Norris is or wasn't, I haven't watched anything recent, I'll be honest with you, but wasn't a great actor. Right. Okay, we all know this.
He could fight.
By any stretch of the imagination. he could say some lines, and he had some charisma. Mm-hmm. And he was a nice guy. Yeah, it came across as just a nice fella. Mm-hmm. But he was no thespian by any stretch. And the scenes with him and the girl, you know, they do the lines and all, and she's good, and it just comes off kind of stiff. But then Ron Silver, who's a great actor,
yeah,
and whoever the woman was playing his wife, their little exchanges and dialogue, you believe they're a real couple, have known each other for years.
Yeah.
You know, it's very natural. It mm-hmm. just flows, and it's like they're just talking to each other, not like they're acting or saying lines. And that's great acting right there, you know. And I did. We were watching this the other night, and I turned to you and said, now, there you go. That's how it's done. You believe it. Yeah. You know, you're just watching two people talking.
Yeah. And I think maybe if they hadn't had that relationship to compare, it wouldn't have drawn as much attention to me.
Yeah.
You know, how bad it was. I mean, yes, I could tell how bad it was between Chuck and the other girl. But
oh, yeah.
It may not have been as glaringly obvious had they not had something to compare it to in the same
film. Of course, then again, it could have been that, you know, Chuck's character was just out to get laid and wasn't really emotionally attached. So then it worked.
Well, there you go. If that's the case.
So, yeah, so the relationship, the psychiatrist and his wife, you know, actually lend more to the scene where they're being killed and stalked, because you care more about them, because
you really feel
that they really care about each other. So, you know, when she finds his body and she goes hysterical, you feel for it and you believe it, and the scene has a little more weight to it, you know.
Yeah.
So that really works, and it really saves the middle of the part of the movie there. But, you know, Chuck Norris, now, like I said before, he's not, you know, not an actor. And he had a few movies before this, but they were, you know, pretty much cookie cutter action movies mm-hmm. where he didn't have to do a whole lot of acting, really. He just had to kind of be there, deliver his lines, and then kick ass. But, you know, his earliest appearance on film, not a lot of people know this. Most people think Way of the Dragon was his first film appearance.
So what was it really?
Or, you know, Return of the Dragon in the States, Bruce Lee film. Well, let me talk about that a second, actually, since I mentioned that. And, you know, he's great in that, though, because he doesn't have any lines. I think he might have one line in or something at the beginning. He has a presence.
Right.
And, you know, that's why Bruce Lee cast him, because of his presence and his martial arts ability. He respected mm-hmm. that, you know. But, so, like, as soon as he steps off the plane, he's got his big-ass sideburns and his glasses, and he just looks like... Just that look like I'm a badass, and mm-hmm. you know, and this whole scene in the Coliseum where he and Bruce are facing off, and you know they first see each other and they acknowledge, and you can tell they're like they know each other. The other guy's a badass, you mm-hmm. know, and they turn around, and they start stretching because they're getting ready to fight like two gladiators because they're in the Coliseum, and that whole scene of the fight is great. It's choreographed fantastic, and the. You know, and of course, Bruce was the director and the producer and the writer of this film. So, and he just, you know, he put the camera up and you got a wide angle of them. You see everything they do.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how you shoot a fight scene. It's not this quick cuts where, you know, oh, this makes it exciting. Like the camera's right in the middle. No, that's horseshit because you can't see the fight. You see a camera moving around and facial expressions and random limbs flying. And that's bullshit because you can't see the fight. You don't know what's going on. This is fantastic. The camera is there and the two, you know, gladiators are right in the middle and you see exactly what they're doing to each other and you go, you know, you appreciate what's happening, you know.
Right.
And the little things, the way they, you know, they do with their faces, the way they look at each other and acknowledge what's going on is just fantastic in this movie. Where they kind of taunt, the one of them taunts the other one with his body language and with his, you know, and his expressions and then at the end where Bruce is beat, he gets beat up a little bit, then he beats the shit out of him, changes his style a little bit, and beats the shit out of Chuck Norris, breaks his arm, breaks a leg, and he kind of looks down like and waves his finger like, nah, don't go on, and Chuck's going on, he knows there's no point in it, he's either going to die or he's not, and he makes one last attempt, goes after Bruce and gets him in a headlock, and he keeps hitting Bruce in the kidneys, and finally he breaks his neck. And as soon as he does it, lets him down, then Bruce gets that look on his face like, oh, like he didn't want to do it,
yeah.
You know? And so that whole scene is great. Chuck Norris, he pulls it off, mm-hmm. you know, in that bit there. Of course, I went off on a big tangent about Bruce Lee because I could talk all day about Bruce Lee. And hey, if you're coming to MarsCon next weekend, one of the panels I'm doing, let's see, I think that's, I've got one in the morning on Saturday, one at night on Saturday on Grindhouse Films. And I'm doing a panel on Bruce Lee, actually Bruce Lee's film career on Sunday, I think at about 1.
Yeah.
Anyway, little plug there. But Chuck Norris' actual first film appearance, believe it or not, was in the Matt Helm film, The Wrecking Crew, with Dean Martin in 1969. He had a bit part. He's one of the henchmen of the bad guys, and you see his face, and he delivers, he has like a line. And I think he gets beat up by Matt Helm.
I do not remember him in that movie.
Yeah, you know, it's real quick, and he's real young.
Yeah, I'd have to go into it one or remembering to look for him.
Yeah, well, you can't miss him though.
Yeah,
I mean, because his face is right on camera, and he has a line, and of course, then the bad guys all jump in, and Matt Helm beats him up, and well, Bruce Lee beats him up. Bruce Lee, you say? Yes, I say. Bruce Lee was a fight consultant and choreographer on that film. For Dean Martin, for the Wrecking Crew. And it's not relating to this movie. Maybe I'll post a couple of pictures on the Phantasmo After Dark Facebook page. But the funny thing about it, we were watching this the first time I saw this all the way through. We're sitting over at Tony's house watching this. And all of a sudden there's a long, I mean, Matt Helm is a fight going on. And he throws some kicks and punches or whatever. And of course it's Dino,
it's
you know.
Dean, yeah.
But then the long shot, and you from behind, I'm like, wait a minute. That guy's moving. That's Bruce Lee. There was no doubt in my mind that it was Bruce Lee doubling for Dean Martin as Matt Helm. Hey, they're not the same size,
yeah.
Not the same hair.
Well,
you both had black
you
hair.
Had no idea. That Bruce
I had no
Lee
idea.
Had
Bruce Lee. Yeah, I had no
movie.
Idea he had anything to do with this. And you know, and you can tell though. You go back and watch it. You can tell that it's Bruce Lee dressed in Dean's clothes doing the fighting for a couple of quick shots.
Yeah.
You know,
not that you can tell that it's Bruce busting his face. It's the way
no,
he moves.
You see, yeah, you see the back. You see the back. You never see his face in these shots, but by the way he's moving, and also the hair and the build. You know, even though it's a long shot, it's like there's no doubt. You know,
yeah, that's a stunt.
But there's a scene, like I say, in a bar, and I saw the back of his head and the side of his face. I'm like, that's Chuck Norris. And then he turns around, gets up, and says something about help. You're like, it's Chuck Norris.
So is that where they met, I guess?
Well, no, actually, Bruce met Chuck Norris at some tournament.
Oh.
It might have been Long Beach Internationals in 64, mm-hmm. I think. I thought, was that 64? I don't know. I can't remember the date on that. But anyway, that's where he met him, and they developed a bit of a friendship and worked out together a little bit. And then he wanted him in the movie when he did Way of the Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was that. And that kind of jump-started Chuck Norris's film career because he was a friend of Steve McQueen's and worked out with Steve McQueen, trained him as well as Bruce Lee did Steve McQueen also. But Steve McQueen told Chuck Norris that he should start taking acting classes because he has a natural charisma and to get involved in film work because of his martial arts. So he did on Steve McQueen's recommendation.
Well, good on him.
Yeah, I guess they helped him a little bit.
I guess so.
Yeah, I never watched Walker, Texas Ranger.
I've seen
when
some
that
of it.
Was on, so I don't know if his acting got any better or not.
I haven't seen a lot of it, but what I saw was not very good.
No.
it was hard to watch.
Yeah.
Well, now, given, I've only seen a few episodes, not much.
I mean, he's a likable guy.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I mean, and I've liked him
in a lot
of his
other stuff.
I mean,
politics and all aside, whatever, I don't pay attention to that crap. Just his personality just seems like a real down-to-earth nice guy, But getting back to Silent Rage.
Slight tangent.
You know, this it's pretty easy to find. I guess it's you can get off Amazon on DVD. I haven't checked or not. I've had a copy for years, and it's a like I said, it's a great fun film. Maybe great's not the right word.
Well, I don't know if fun is the right word either.
Well, it's
very suspenseful,
it's
a little fun stressful.
If you like suspense movies,
and
you like Chuck Norris, or if you don't like Chuck Norris, check it out on the horror aspect of suspense.
Yeah.
You know, just for that alone, because like I said, it opens up. You have no idea. I mean, just because it says Chuck Norris is the only reason you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't. The first 10 minutes or so, you're watching a suspense horror movie like a Halloween or the beginning of Funhouse or something like that. You know, it's not until Chuck steps out of the police car with his cowboy hat on,
right?
Which is the first time he played a Texas lawman was in this movie. Something that would serve him well for many years.
Yes, indeed. Pay a few bills with that one.
Yeah, it's not until that happens that you know it's a Chuck Norris movie. And then the other scenes that he's not in, his other films, even the scenes that he's not in, it still has the same kind of feel going on.
Yeah.
And this doesn't. The scene with the doctors, it's, okay, now you're watching a science gone wrong movie or, horror movie like that. So it's really, on a couple of different levels, the film works. You know, and it caters to the horror suspense if you're into that. And then, of course, they throw in the biker scene. And then, okay, now you got the Chuck Norris fight scene. Yeah, so it keeps you, that satisfies that taste if you're looking for that. Yeah.
You can tell, though, that part felt like it was added in. I don't know if it was added in later, if they rewrite the script before they started filming, like you talked about earlier. But
oh, yeah.
You can tell.
It
adds nothing to the show, whatever.
No, really. It has nothing to do, it doesn't relate to the rest of the movie, except for this other scene, which they probably put in later also, where Chuck meets the deputy
Charlie? Is that his name?
Charlie, yeah. Flounder. Where Chuck meets Flounder in the cafe. He's having breakfast.
Yeah, right.
And there's three of the bikers are in there. And they try to give him a little shit, and Chuck shuts them down. And then they want revenge on him and said, you didn't see the last of me. And Chuck says, you better hope I have, or something like that. And so then they run into him again later on. It's okay fight. So there's a couple slow motion scenes in it which don't work really well because it's weird slow motion. It's like speeded up slow motion. You have to see it to believe
weird.
It.
You just have to see it to understand. It's
that,
weird.
It's that part's not done well, but the rest of it's all right, you know. And of course, there's a couple of tit flashes in it, which never hurts in any film whatsoever, and they're very lovely in this one. And that chick never did another film.
Never?
I checked. This was the only film she did. And she was cute, too. Okay, cute face. You know?
Yeah, she wasn't a cute wonderful boobs, actor too. Or anything.
Well, no. No. I think the leader of the bikers, though, I think he was one of Chuck Norris's like stunt guys that worked with him a lot.
Yeah.
I think I read something about that. So they, knew each other. And Chuck, actually, he did. And I also heard he had done this in other films. He actually hit a few of the stunt guys.
Oh, really? On accident?
Yeah, in the heat of the fight.
Yeah.
And somebody misjudges the distance and laid a guy out, probably a couple of guys. I know he did that in the Octagon.
Wow.
I heard him tell that story one time. So, but, Bruce Lee hit a couple guys, too, before. And on accident, you get caught up in the choreography and somebody steps a little too close.
Yeah.
And you're going by rote,
right.
Boom.
Yep.
And that's the thing about choreographing a fight scene and why they take long to do. Maybe it take 4 days to choreograph a 2-minute fight scene.
Yeah.
Or a minute fight scene, because you got to practice. Yeah. And that's a lot of people don't understand.
It's a little bit like a dance.
It is. It's like a dance. And you've got to, you hit your mark. And if somebody doesn't hit their mark, they're going to get hurt.
Yep.
So you have to hit your mark, and you got to trust the other guy's going to hit his mark. So you just miss each other. And depending on where the camera is, you can miss each other by foot, really, if the camera's in the right place. But sometimes it's not. And if they shoot multiple angle cameras, shots, you got to be close so it looks realistic. And so if the other guy oversteps his mark, is a little quick, or is a little slow getting there, not right on time, somebody's going to get hit. And Chuck Norris laid a few guys out in this. There's a scene in the Octagon where I remember watching this. God, this was in the early 80s. Of course, it had to be the early 80s because the Octagon had just come out. It had to be 1980 because that's when the movie came out. Or maybe it was a little after and he was talking back about the Octagon. Maybe that was it. But David Letterman had a daytime TV show, a daytime talk show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Chuck Norris was a guest on it. And I happened to be homesick that day from school. I was like, yes! And I remember this vividly, him talking about this one scene in the Octagon where he's going through the Octagon and a guy jumps out and he kicks this guy. And then, after he finishes the guy, a guy jumps out behind him, he spins around, kicks this guy. And then another guy, boom, and he kicks him. It's like a series of guys. As soon as he hits this guy, another one comes out of one of the little alcoves after him. Well, he was coming out. The one guy jumped too soon and surprised him. Boom, he spun around and kicked him. And when he was like, oh, crap, I kicked that guy. And when he was looking down to see what was wrong, the other guy jumped and didn't know what happened, jumped out on his mark. But Chuck was off his mark by that point. And reactively, he spun around and kicked, knocked that guy out. He did like 3 guys until the last guy was like, whoa, wait a minute, hold on. The last guy
this
saw
wasn't
was
in the movie.
Yeah. I give, cut. So, shit happens on action film. What are you going to do? you know, I think the last time I saw Chuck Norris, the most recent one, was Expendables 2.
Oh, right, yeah.
Which was a beautiful scene, because he spoofs the Chuck Norris jokes, you know.
That was hilarious.
Yeah, don't they call you the low wolf? Sometimes.
You know, I have to wonder, how does Chuck Norris feel about the fact that he's got all these crazy jokes?
Oh, well, you know, he loves it. I mean, he did that scene.
On him.
No,
jokes.
No.
Yeah.
He did that scene spoofing himself.
Yeah.
And then, you remember that commercial, that video game commercial?
No.
This was just a couple years ago, where these guys, this video game, I forget, I guess it was for a system or something where you could customize stuff, or I can't remember now, but it had these two guys doing this video game, and it had video game versions of themselves on the screen, kicking Chuck Norris's ass.
Oh.
Yeah, and they, like, put his face on a video game character, and they upload the internet. And it showed Chuck Norris watching it and going, oh, yeah? And he went after the guys. So, yeah, it was pretty fun. So he's got a, you know, he's got a good sense of humor about
That's
it,
funny.
You know. But, man, yeah, you know, I'll put up a, check the Phantasmo After Dark Facebook page. I'll put up a, you know, a lot of pictures from this as I can find in a folder there. And maybe I'll try to put the trailer up, too. God, I haven't seen the trailer in forever. I wonder how that plays, how
yeah,
it tries to sell the movie.
It, so I don't remember.
That'll be pretty telling to see how they market that film. Mm-hmm. I know the poster says something. There's a blurb on the poster that says, science created him. Now Chuck Norris has to destroy him. And there's a long blurb after that that goes on. So, yeah, that'd be great. Pretty cool. Yeah, this was the first, actually, this is the first film produced by Chuck Norris's production company, Top Kick Productions, that went on to do Lone Wolf McQuade after that, and I guess the rest of his films, in conjunction with Golden Globus and Canon for a while. But yeah, I'll be interested to see what the trailer, how they try to present it with that. Definitely we'll put that up. And hey, if you want to drop us a line on to tell us how we're doing, or to shut the hell up, don't ever talk again, or any ideas on podcast you'd like to hear us talk about, drop us a line at the Phantasmo After Dark email. That's phantasmoad@gmail.com, all one word, phantasmode@gmail.com, or on the, just, you know, throw a line or two on the Phantasmo After Dark Facebook page there. We'd love to hear from you. Wouldn't we?
We would indeed.
All right. Well, you know, I think that wraps this one up. I can't think of much else to, unless I go off on more tangents about martial arts stuff. It's a big geek for martial arts stuff. God, there's so many other ones we could talk about at some point. We could talk about the Lone Wolf and Cub films, or, you know, Bruce Lee, or the Lady Snowblood, or Zatoichi, or, you know.
Well, I have a feeling we'll probably do Bruce Lee sometime in the future. Since we're doing this panel, we'll have a lot of information, so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that'll be one.
I anticipate that will become a podcast at some point.
Oh, yeah. That'd be pretty fun, too. But, you know, talking about these, I got to talk about the Mad Helm. Those would be really fun to do, too. I need to get that set. But, you know, we ought to do the Coburn Flint films. Hmm. In Like Flint, Iron Man Flint.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of people think, you know, the Austin Powers films, you know, they, oh, spoofing James Bond and blah, blah, blah. But it's more really a takeoff on the Derek Flint films than it is anything else.
Well, that could be interesting.
And if you watch those, you'll see what I mean. But, yeah, we'll have to do that sometime, because those are a lot of fun.
Cool.
Yeah, anyway, so upcoming podcast coming up. Got some guests coming back on some future ones. I keep saying that, but circumstances have prevented it from happening.
Soon.
Yeah, we would have, this podcast actually should have been, or would have been, the return of Tony Mercer. My original co-host here, Tony, was going to come back and join me for one, and unfortunately, the weather, we had a
snowpocalypse.
Yeah, snowmageddon here. or as they said on the radio, Snowy McSnowface is what they were calling it. Big snowstorm in the last day or two that really shut.
Big for Virginia Beach.
Yeah. It shut everything down. We all got about a foot of snow all around. It just shut everything down. Everything was icy and nasty. So we couldn't get together and talk over things and do the podcast. So we're going to do that probably next time, hopefully. And I'll tell you right now, what we're going to do for that is going to be the movie Danger Diabolic, which is a great film.
Oh, nice.
So tune in for that. Check us back out. And I guess that's all for tonight, huh?
That's it.
All right. Hey, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Good night.
Good night.